Welcome back to the Press Box, and it's Kentucky Derby week 152nd version. And my great guest, one of my best friends ever in the history of the world, Dan Liebman. Dan, we go way, way back, but you know, I always think when we chat, it's like we chatted yesterday. I mean, you're so much fun and such a great guy. And the first horse I ever owned a part of, you and I and Mike Wolkin had together. So that's how far we go back.
Yeah, I believe that would take us back, Gene, to late 70s, early 80s, sometime like that. It's hard to believe it's been that many years, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel any older. I know you don't.
My back does. My back does, but my brain doesn't. And certainly my handicapping skills hopefully have been honed a little bit over the years. And, you know, there's just something special about Derby week, especially when you're a Kentuckian, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing that people don't understand. When you're a Kentuckian, this is sewn into your fiber. You know, it's part of, I mean, what you're proudest of.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think back to when I used to travel for the Blood Horse and go to foreign countries. I don't care what country you're in the world. You mentioned Kentucky. They know three things: Kentucky bourbon, Kentucky fried chicken, Kentucky Derby. That's what you hear. And hey, I'm pretty proud of all three of those things. Being a horse racing guy, I mean, I just don't care where you are. People know the Derby. It's the greatest 2 minutes in sports. There's no doubt about it. And it really is in your blood and in your fiber. And if you're a Kentuckian, hey, on Derby Day, you're at a Derby party, and you've probably got on a Derby hat. And there's roses somewhere nearby, and you've got a mint julep, and you sing My Old Kentucky Home, and it's hard not to just well up inside when that happens every year. It's just special.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell one quick story, and then we'll get to the subject at hand. But Leanne and I got married in Argentina, and so we got married up in Mendoza. We flew down to Buenos Aires, and I was out for a walk by myself one morning, and turned the corner. I saw this big bronze plaque on the side of this wall, this brick, beautiful brick building. It said the Argentine Turf Club. And, you know, so I said, you know, I just walked right in, and man, what a beautiful, beautiful place, and real rich, deep woods and leathers and everything. And I'm looking around, and this gentleman comes up, he's speaking in Spanish. And you know, I don't know Spanish very fluently, and probably enough to know, you know, hola. But he comes up, and all I knew to do is pull out my owner's license from Kentucky, and he goes, Kentucky? And it was like I had won the lottery. I mean, now I became a celebrity, and they invited me in. We had breakfast. We talked horses, and it was the calling card was my Kentucky owner's license. So it'll get you in places that you normally can't get in, you know, especially when you're
really
traveling.
It really will. And I've had similar experiences myself. You know, I got invited to Chile one time, and then as I was there, got invited to the races, and they found out that I was from Kentucky. And literally the next thing I knew, I was presenting the trophy for the stakes race. I was like, what the heck? Well, if you're from Kentucky, yeah, and you're involved in horses, it's like, my goodness, this is just, it's incredible. So it carries a lot of weight, doesn't it? Little did they know.
Well, I want to talk to you about dosage, and we're pulling up the subject this week, Kentucky Derby 152, and I was looking in handicapping, and I saw some pedigrees that interested me, and you know, Dan, for the listening people, they don't really realize how, you know, when I started, and you were at the racing forum, and Logan was there, and you know, you got the opportunity to you know, really work and learn a lot under Leon Rasmussen and Logan and some of the greats in the game of journalism, of racing, thoroughbred racing journalism, and you were kind of bestowed that title of kind of picking that mantle up and looking at bloodlines everything back in the racing form. When your office was kind of tucked in there where the clubhouse is and underneath there, and what a beautiful location. But, man, you go way, way back with learning bloodlines and pedigrees, and I really think it's a lost art in handicapping today.
Well, you're probably right. You know, it's funny, those offices at the racing form at Keeneland, those were some of the original stalls at Keeneland Racecourse. So, I mean, it was amazing being in that space. And Logan Bailey, you're right, was a guy that I really, he mentored me, taught me a lot. When they offered me Leon Rasmussen's position after he retired to write the Bloodlines column, I mean, I was kind of awed. I was honored. I didn't know if I was up to it, but I sure tried to put everything I had into it. You know, I started handicapping. I was about 12 and taught myself how to handicap. And when you look at the races every day, you just start absorbing a lot about pedigrees. And you just, you know, start to see certain sires that get horses that tend towards speed or towards stamina or towards grass or first-time starters, kind of whatever, even ones that run better in the mud. There were just lots of different things, and you just kind of absorb all of that. And dosage really is pretty darn simple. It really just is looking at the balance of speed and stamina in the pedigree. And it's nothing new. Dosage dates back to the early 1900s, when, of course, they were writing pedigrees out by hand and looking at them. And they just started to see similar patterns and traits and pedigrees. And that's kind of where it kind of came from. And a guy named Steve Roman really brought it into prominence in the 1970s, and he developed what's called the dosage index, and it gives you a number to look at, looking at speed, classic, stamina, and all that. And Steve Roman noticed that when he was looking in the 70s, he went all the way back to the 20s, and no winner of the Derby had had a dosage index over 4.0. Well, that was pretty significant. And Leon kind of took that to the next level, writing every year about the Derby horses and the dosage index, their center of distribution. And gosh, it had years where it was tossing out favorites and other short priced horses, and people kind of all of a sudden kind of latched onto it. And as we know, anything is not going to be right every time. You know, you're going to have times when it isn't. You know, Strike the Gold was the one that was over the number. And of course, then people kind of bashed Steve Roman a little bit, because after Strike the Gold, he reclassified Aladar and it brought the number back where it needed to be. But I think before, they just updated, Gene, like 2 weeks ago, in the first time in like 10 years, they added some more stallions to what they call the Chef de Ross stallions. And they take those stallions and look at five categories: brilliant, intermediate, classic, solid, and professional. And so they look at the offspring of those stallions, and you have to really see an abundance of horses by those stallions that fit in there somewhere. Are they mostly sprinters? Do they also get some classic type horses, or do they mostly get distance horses? So they just added 23 stallions about 2 weeks ago, and that was actually a wonderful thing. So before they added those horses, there were 9 recent Derby winners that were over 4.0. When you factor in the new stallions, there's only 3. And that's Charismatic, Giacomo, and Nyquist. So it's interesting how that worked out. And this year, as I look at the Derby field, I believe there's only 2 horses over 4.0. So you're not throwing out very many this year, which is kind of a good thing. It means breeders are breeding horses that, you know, headed towards the Derby. But Full Effort and So Happy are the 2 I saw that were over that number. But it's a cool thing to talk about. It's another... You know, I always tell people, Gene, when I handicap, I don't look at I'm not one of these guys that looks at one factor. I can't just look at speed figures or just look at pedigree or just look at past performance. I like to look at the whole picture, the whole deal. And I think dosage is just one element.
Right.
So
right.
A pretty cool element, pretty neat element.
Yeah.
But, you know, you and I have talked before about how training patterns have changed over the years, just like things have changed in every sport over the years. And and I think dosage, you know, kind of, I think the breeders kind of certainly do look at trying to get that perfect balance in a horse.
Yeah. And you hit on exactly that. You know, I was on a panel earlier this week, and you know, and we were talking about a lot of different things, and I said, you know, guys, I said, you know, where does pedigree fall in your all's equations? And they were three very prominent people, and it was almost like they really matter. And I'm baffled by that, not because I think they're all very astute, very learned, very good at what they do, and I respect them all for their opinions. But you know, the fact is, I think you're absolutely right. There's no absolute tool that you can point to and say that is it and that's the only thing. But you know, we had the thing with the Apollo curse, that no horse had won the Derby since Apollo, that hadn't raced as a two-year-old, and then suddenly Justify wins it, and then Mage comes back and wins it. So we had two, and then all of a sudden everybody said, well, it doesn't mean anything anymore. Well, we're still talking about only two horses in the last 100-plus years. That doesn't mean that it's not infallible, but it doesn't mean it's not important, and that's what I tried to emphasize.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I just think there's so many factors to look at, and I mean, anybody says pedigree is not important, I don't know what they're thinking, because it means a whole lot to me. But you know, in talking about the changing in training, you know, give you a good example. I mean, the horse that I like in this year's Derby, Chief Wallaby's, only had three starts. Well, back when you and I were getting going in the 80s, I never would have looked at a horse that only had three starts. I don't know if anybody would have even considered running a horse in the Derby in three starts, but things have changed. We're in a new era and a new time, and trainers do things differently. And is it for the better? I don't know the answer to that, but it's just different.
Yeah. You know, look at emerging market. I mean, this horse scares me, but he's ran two times. I mean, he wins the, you know, the Louisiana Derby, but he skips the Bluegrass because I think there was a little virus going around the barn in Chad Brown's barn, or so, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't run. He's run twice. And, you know, I mean, you know, looking back, and you and I were around when Woody Stevens, I mean, he ran Devil's Bag in the Derby trial, and then he didn't run him in the Derby. They came up with a chip in his knee. But, you know, he ran the Belmont He wins the Belmont with a horse that ran 4 days earlier.
Yeah, I know. As we've said, they were just different trainers. Horses were certainly bred differently, you know.
Right.
Two starts, I don't know. I mean, hey, there's a filly in the Oaks that Chad Brown has, always a runner. She's 2 for 2, both impressively. She might just be what we call a freak. She might be that good after two starts. Maybe emerging market is just that good, but it really is a different time to even think about that. I mean, if you had told me that I would, you know, ever look at a Derby horse that didn't run 3 or 4 times as a 2-year-old, I would have said, you're nuts. There's no way.
Yeah.
But
this is
where we are. And you have to, you certainly have to adapt your handicapping.
Right.
I mean, you know, you certainly got to move forward with that. And it makes it more fun. It makes it more challenging. I know that.
Absolutely. You know, the thing I wanted to touch on, and I don't know if you've handicapped the Derby. I know you mentioned Chief Wallaby. And I think he's very, very talented. I love Mike and KK. We go back when Mike was training and KK trained. And, you know, I love them. Don Ball was the president of the KTA when I was at KTA.
Yep.
So I really they're great people to root for. Here's a horse that didn't run as a 2-year-old. I mean, how do you value now horses that don't run as two-year-olds comparative to what used to be? I mean, how do we, I still think it's important, but I mean, but I'm saying it's not infallible, but it's still important in what I look at.
Yeah, and I agree, and I certainly agree with Mike and KK Ball being just wonderful people. I mean, they're just great folks, and I didn't pick the horse because of that, but it sure doesn't hurt. It sure doesn't hurt to root for good people. You know, certainly Bill Mott. You and I both remember him when he very first got started. It's really kind of a delight to be the age we are now and have watched trainers from the day they started until they got in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just really cool to watch that. Would I have ever in the past picked a horse in the Derby that was adding blinkers? Probably not, but I've watched his races. I've watched them close. I know what a sharp trainer Bill is. I think it's going to turn this horse. I think not turn him around. He's been running well, but I think it's going to be the extra thing that he needs. But I think you just have to have a new way of handicapping. You can't just, I'm not going to just look and say, well, I'm going to throw this horse out because he's from Japan. What are you talking about? I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch replays of his races. See, I'm going to look at his pedigree. I'm going to look at his style. I mean, I think that you just have to look at all these things. Has the horse, had X number of starts? Has the horse been on synthetic? I mean, there's all these things now that I think you have to look at. And it kind of makes handicapping more fun. Because there's so many factors, but it sure is different than what you talked about, the Woody Stevens days and those kind of horsemen. I don't think we have the quote unquote hard boots anymore. These are a different type of trainer. Let's face it, the guys back in those days, nobody had 200 horses in their barn.
They were lucky to have 20
or 20, but whatever. Yeah. And so it's just a different time. And, the cool thing is it's still the Derby. It's still the most important race every year that's run in horse racing. And I love the other Triple Crown races. I love the Breeders' Cup. I love to watch the Melbourne Cup and the Ark and on and on and on. The Derby's just the Derby, and I hope it always will be.
Yeah. Well, we keep telling stories, but you're right. I mean, being Kentuckians as we are, it's even more important. But, you mentioned Bill Mott, and Bill Mott started under Jack Venberg, and we both knew Jack and what a traditionalist and hard boot guy Jack was. And Bill Mott is still that guy, and he's trained so many great horses like Cigar, and I kind of put Sovereignty in that group too. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, there's no way I can bet him to win. He didn't race, as a 2-year-old. He's putting blinkers on for the Derby, the big thing, that's like changing putters before the Masters, or Pete Rose going from a Mizuno to a Horton Bradsby before the World Series. I said, you think you know more about training horses than Bill Mott? But I think you got to hold on to certain principles as a handicapper. I think Chief Wallaby is one of the top three or four horses in this race. Doesn't mean he can't win, but if you're looking at it and you think that, I mean, Chief Wallaby's your horse, but if you looked at pedigree alone as the only thing you would look at, who's the horse that you would pick in that regard? Have you been able to deduce it down to that level?
I don't know that I've quite deduced it to that level, but I will say I was a huge fan when he was racing of Curlin. When he went to stud, I was 100% sure he was going to make it. My partner at the time, Susan, had some mares, and we bred to him his first season. And so Renegade, being by Into Mischief out of a Curlin mare, is a pedigree I love. And I think he's an incredibly talented horse. I hate the post position. I got to be honest. I mean, that's a tough spot. But he would probably be the one that if you asked me, hey, just pick the winner on nothing but pedigree, that's probably where I would land.
Yeah. You know, I've got Renegade in the top five as well. I'm not betting to win. I think the one post kind of was and his running style being a closer. He's just got so much to do coming from that place, and you know how many horses are going to avalanche down on top of him. But there's a horse by Curlin in the race that I'm very intrigued by, Golden Tempo. And I really think this horse hasn't, had his best race yet. And he's been all over the track a little bit. I thought his weaving kind of run in the Louisiana Derby was better than it looked on paper. I don't know if he's good enough to win, but I think he's good enough to grab a part of it at the end. And so Curlin, he's out of a Berdini mare. You know, that pedigree is as strong as you can get for a distance of ground.
Very strong pedigree. And I think Cherie DeVoe is a real up-and-coming trainer. I like what I see out of her and the way her horses run. Great pedigree. Obviously, he had some trouble in his last start. I'm with you. Right. I don't think we've seen his best, but I'm not sure we're going to see it on Saturday. Doesn't hurt that the rider she puts up is arguably the best in the country right now, but I'm just not sure he's quite good enough at this stage right now. But you're right about the pedigree. I don't think the pedigree could be a lot better.
Yeah. I want to ask you one last question. Further Ado is my pick. I think we're both Keeneland kind of grads. We spent a lot of time at Keeneland. This horse breaks his maiden there by 20. He comes back. He wins the Bluegrass by 11. He probably could have been by 15. It's probably two of the most magnificent runs. I worry a little bit that he may be a Keeneland horse as opposed to a Churchill horse. But he did win the Jockey Club Grade 2 at Churchill as a two-year-old. I really think that of the horses in the race, the horse that maybe has the potential, not saying he is today, but has the potential to be a special horse, might be Further Ado.
Well, I was really impressed with his run in the Bluegrass. And like you say, we cut our teeth at Keeneland, and there's no better place to cut your teeth. I guess if I could only visit one racetrack in the country every year, boy, that would be my pick. I think my dad said the first time I was there was in a stroller. And so that's been a few years ago. I worry a little bit about him being in the right place to make that run. But certainly Johnny Velasquez is not going to hurt his chances. And his Bluegrass was visually impressive. The other horse, I think, Gene, that's going to run well is the Puma. And there's a trainer that certainly trains a little differently than some of the other guys. And I've been pretty impressed with what I've seen when he brings a horse to a big race. And that colt really just kind of – I like a colt that just digs in. Like, here's my heart, and I'm going to show you my heart. And if it's good enough, okay. If it's not, okay. But I'm going to give you all that I've got. And And I think he's going to run a big race on Saturday, too.
Yeah, I do, too. And you nailed it on the head. It's good to see Essential Quality have a runner like him. I'm looking for the next wave of stallions that can become classic kind of stallions. And, you know, the thing I wonder is, as I went and I saw it, I mean, first of all, he's a beautiful chestnut, and Essential Quality was a big gray. I come from that old school that says, you know, their best sons are usually the same color as their daddy. And obviously he's about as far away from being a gray as you can. But, you know, he's just a tinge on the small side. And with the Derby anymore, you're going to take some bumps and bruises. Now, I think his heart is as big as anybody in the race. I really hope and I do expect him to run a big race. But, you know, smaller horses have done well in the Derby in the previous years. We know that as well. So I just think he may be a tinge on the smaller side. And, you know, they all look small if you put them up next to that big gray thing that just drew in today. Great White, but I worry a little bit about, you know, especially if he gets in a rugged spot going into that first turn, and you know, you never can predict, but there's going to be a battle somewhere along in the race, and whether or not his physicality is such that he might take a little punishment.
Well, you know, my first Derby, I was in the infield with my sister, and I just caught a glimpse of a horse named Secretariat go by. And I try to measure them up to that, and they just all fall a little short, Gene. And somebody said, "Do you think you'll see one as good in your lifetime?" And my answer was, "I hope not," because we've seen a lot of really good horses, both of us.
Yeah.
But that was a special horse, and it was cool that was my first Derby, and that's the guy that really hooked. That's the guy that hooked me on. I want to be part of this industry some way. It happened to be through journalism and then, you know, through some ownership, and I've got a little piece of some horses in a partnership right now, but you know, the Derby's just always special, and I look forward to it every year, as I know you do.
Yeah. I'm going to let you go. You're a fantastic friend. You're one of the most learned people on the industry that I've ever known in my life. I've known you since, you know, the day that you got the job from then on at DRF, and then the best editor and chief ever at the Blood Horse, the standard in our industry for so many years. And, but, you know, on top of all of that, the thing that attracts me to you, Dan Lieben, is the fact that you're one hell of just a good guy. And I've always appreciated the relationship. And we make, like I said, before we got on the recorder, we may go years without talking, not years, but months. And it's like we talk every day. And that's a friendship that you can't put away.
And you summed it up right there. That's when you know you have good friends, when you can just hook right back up and it's like it was yesterday. And you talk about memories, but you talk about going forward. And here we can talk about this year's race. And it's very special.
Well, you have a great one, and watch it and celebrate. I'm in East Lansing, Michigan, to see the graduation celebration of our son this Saturday, my first miss of a Derby in 27 years. But I'll tell you one thing. When it comes about time for that Derby, you can best assured I'll be standing and singing my old Kentucky home. And I tear up every year when they play that song, because it cuts right to the core of who we are in this state, my friend.
You're exactly right. Thanks, Gino.
Thanks, Dan, and good luck. Tell everybody hello, and I appreciate your time, my friend. You're the best.
You got it. Happy Derby.
You too. See you, Dan.
All right, man.